It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak Island's Independent Living Center will be holding a Disability Pride event tomorrow at the Buscan River State Recreation Site's Ben R. Shelter. KMXT's Dylan Simard reports it's the organization's first in-person Pride event since the pandemic began.
Bev Cole is an independent living advocate for the Kodiak Independent Living Center. She helps connect people with disabilities to different state and federal assistance programs, as well as coordinating quality of life improvements, like hiring caregivers and installing wheelchair ramps. She's also one of the organizers of this weekend's Disability Pride event.
We're really excited for it. We're so excited to see everybody in person, get everybody out, and just to really talk and see each other.
The event has special significance for the Independent Living Center. It's been more than 2 years since the last in-person Disability Pride event was held in Kodiak. It also coincides with the 32nd anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. Disability advocacy groups across the state celebrated the occasion earlier this week over Zoom, according to Cole.
Pride itself is about accepting and honoring each person's uniqueness and seeing it as a natural and beautiful part of human diversity. The thing about the disability community is that it's non-discriminatory and the fact that anyone can join during any time in their life. We're really here for everybody.
Kodiak's in-person Disability Pride event is being held Saturday, July 30th at the Buscan River State Recreation Site's Ben Orr Shelter.
We'll have balloons, s'mores, bring your instruments, lawn games provided, and bring your own picnic lunch.
The event will run from 1 to 4 p.m. and is open to the public. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
A team of researchers has been spending part of the summer at a Kodiak Island bay studying the effects of climate change. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports it's part of a community monitoring project that could hold bigger clues for the future of fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska.
Joellen Lotzfeldt spends part of her time at a cabin she owns on Larsen Island in Kodiak's Anton Larsen Bay, less than a mile skiff ride from the boat launch. Deer and Kodiak brown bears frequent the shoreline of Anton Larsen Bay, and sea otters and loons float on the water's surface. Lotzfeldt is a marine ecosystem researcher, and she says under the water, there's a thriving ecosystem, too.
The bay has lots of great eelgrass and kelp beds, which is of particular importance to young fish that have hatched and are spending that first summer somewhere before they'll leave.
Of particular interest to Lotzfeldt are the tiny species that you can't see, zooplankton. Those are the microscopic organisms that drift in bodies of freshwater and saltier bays like Anton Larsen. She's been monitoring zooplankton at sites around the bay since 2017.
I'm doing work and research in what I call the near shore zone, which is really kind of where the freshwater comes down, meets the ocean, all the way out to where the continental shelf drops off. That interplay of organisms is humans down to the little teeny phytoplankton. And it all matters.
Lotzfeldt says one of the biggest concerns she heard from her neighbors when she'd tell them about her research were questions about where fish once common to Anton Larsen Bay, like Pacific cod, had gone. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is also trying to answer that question. The organization's draft Regional Climate Action Plan for the Gulf of Alaska outlines studying the effects of marine heat waves on juvenile Pacific cod as one of its recommendations. Increased research on zooplankton is also part of the plan's proposal. This year, Lotzfeldt received funding from Alaska Sea Grant to expand her monitoring project and welcomed a team of researchers to her property on Larsen Island in mid-July.
It's on the road system, so there's some logistics, the reason that Anton is selected.
Ben Laurel is a research fisheries biologist with NOAA's Alaska Fisheries Science Center. He was part of the team that traveled to Larsen Island earlier this summer to study Pacific cod. He says that site monitoring, like what's being done on Anton Larsen Bay, could hold bigger clues for the rest of the Gulf. And it's critically important as research budgets and seasonal temperatures tend to fluctuate.
We need to have these sorts of partnerships established and information sort of exchanged between groups so they can kind of benefit from one another.
An invaluable part of that information exchange comes from people who live on Anton Larsen Bay and fishermen from Kodiak who are on the front lines of climate change, according to Laurel.
We've been doing this for 17 years, but, you know, there's people out there for more than 30, 40 years that have seen even, you know, more dramatic changes.
Connecting locals living on the bay and researchers was a big part of this last trip to Larsen Island, according to Lotsfeldt. She says that connection is crucial as climate change accelerates ocean variability. And she's hoping to expand the annual gathering to include more members of the community in years to come.
Having information from people who live on the sea or live on the coast, who are out there all the time, that information is valuable. It may not be a perfectly designed, statistically valid study, but it's really good information.
Lotsfeldt says it's too early to tell whether this summer's samples from Anton Larsen Bay point to broader trends in the Gulf of Alaska, but it's just a starting point she hopes to build on in the coming years. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers recently negotiated a deal for Alaska Airlines customer service agents, cargo workers, and other employees. Leadership says it would make them the highest paid airline employees in the industry. The current contract wasn't set to expire for another 2 years, but Union General Vice President of Air Transport Richard Johnson says both the union and Alaska Airlines were motivated to get to the negotiating table last month to try to address industry-wide staffing struggles.
And so we went into that process and we got a contract extension in 2 weeks, which under normal circumstances seems to take 2 to 3 years.
The tentative agreement would raise base wages as much as 17% starting next month, with more scheduled raises down the line. It includes job security clauses as well as longevity pay increases. Benefits would remain the same. Johnson says recent staff shortages have caused, quote, a crisis, close quote, for airline workers, from burnout and forced overtime to higher injury rates and having to deal with frustrated, unruly passengers. Johnson hopes higher wages will help attract more workers and push other airlines to address the issue as well.
Without a doubt, 100% it raises the bar, and everybody has been put on notice, and they know it.
An Alaska Airlines spokesperson said the company is, quote, thrilled to make a meaningful investment, close quote, in its employees. Voting for the tentative agreement ends August 2nd. If it is approved, the new contract would go into effect August 10th. Meanwhile, according to industry news site Simple Flying, Alaska Airlines is still negotiating an agreement with its pilots, who authorized to strike in May. Reality TV stars from the long-running Discovery series Alaska Bush People made a brief stop in Petersburg earlier this month. The famous Brown family tried to buy land after living in Washington the last 3 years. But as Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, locals did not welcome them as neighbors.
Petersburg South Harbor is home to many large commercial fishing boats. One of them is the Norseman, owned by Mark Hofstad. He can be found there most days he's not fishing. In early July, Hofstad noticed the Alaska Bush People's boat on the same float and staff from the show's production company walking around. So he started bugging the harbor master to move them someplace else.
Just because I don't want to look at them.
On one of Hofstad's visits to the harbor office, a Brown family member also showed up.
That one kid, I think they call him Gabe, introduced himself and stuck out his hand. I looked down. I ain't shaking your hand. He just looked at me and walked away.
Hofstad is clearly not a fan of the series. The show follows the Brown family through 13 seasons as they attempt to live off the land in Alaska.
After 34 years in the wilderness of Alaska, Billy Brown and his family are committing to the bush like never before.
But they haven't always been residents. That clip was from 2016 after six family members were charged with 60 counts of PFD fraud for receiving nearly $21,000 in payments when they didn't qualify. Patriarch Billy Brown, who died last year, and one of his sons pleaded guilty and were sentenced to 30 days in jail, fined, and ordered to do community service. They were also banned from applying for PFDs in the future. The deal dropped the cases against the other family members, but they still had to pay back the dividends. Hofstad calls them liars.
I mean, look what the show is. It's non-residents portraying themselves as Alaskans that basically make us all look like a bunch of frickin' morons.
Emily Fehrenbacher knows not all Alaskans like the series. She herself had been an avid follower. For 5 years, she wrote a column for the Anchorage Daily News about reality TV in the state. She says Alaska Bush People draws a following down south.
Really, it's like a lot of Alaska reality shows where they're playing up just like the remoteness and kind of building drama around the typical Alaskan lifestyle.
But the Browns push it a little further, from reality. And Fehrenbacher understands why it rubs some Alaskans the wrong way.
It just seemed like a lot of it was pretty staged for television.
The show's production company, Park Slope Productions, nor the Discovery Channel, responded to requests for comment for the story. Disgust for the Browns and their show is a popular sentiment among Petersburg residents. Local realtor George Doyle was contacted by the production company, but says he didn't engage.
We're approached, but I didn't respond to them because, again, we weren't interested in having that type of activity.
Doyle says again because this wasn't the first time. About a decade ago, the show was looking for a plot across Frederick Sound on the mainland in a place called Point Agassiz.
The folks at Agassiz weren't necessarily excited in seeing the camera crew and everybody move in there.
The Brown family has lived in different communities in Alaska over the years and has burned some bridges along the way. About a decade ago, they were at Mosquito Lake, 30 miles north of Haines on the highway. Jim Stanford was a neighbor and says they seemed like con men.
They certainly weren't living off the land, you know, building their own cabin and stuff like that. You could tell they were more users than givers. Not really the kind of people that you would want as a direct neighbor.
He says he doesn't wish the Brown family ill will, but they didn't fit in with his community where folks helped each other.
Depending on the neighbors for support and everybody pitching in, the Browns weren't cut of that cloth.
Hofstad, Doyle, and others in Petersburg say they're not against all Alaska reality TV. For example, the National Geographic show Port Protection, which is based out of Prince of Wales Island, is a local favorite. Hofstad says it's not fake.
You know, I know some of the people in the show, and, you know, it depicts life.
The Alaska Bush People show was unsuccessful in buying land near Petersburg. Another local realtor did show them a piece of property near town, but they didn't want it. So when their boat left Petersburg's harbor July 15th, Hofstad was relieved.
Keep going, man. Just keep going.
Where they're headed and whether or not there will be a 14th season in Alaska is unknown. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.